Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to Orlando Entrepreneurs. My name is Josh, and I'm here with our founder, David Brim, and we're traveling around Orlando right now having conversations with entrepreneurs in the area to hear their story, how they got started, and the things that are passionate on their heart. So today we're having a great conversation with a female entrepreneur who's raised a good amount of capital, who started a business, and who's passionate about growing businesses and helping things get launched. So ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome our friend, CEO of Fat Merchant, to the show, Ms. Sanira. How do you pronounce your last name?
Madani.
Madani. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you guys having me today. I'm so excited to tell you guys the story of Fat Merchant, as well as share a little bit of my journey and hopefully inspire some entrepreneurs that are out there that are listening and who are in the middle of launching their companies or have a great idea and that kind of are looking for a little bit of inspiration today on how to get to the next step.
Man, that's great. So for those who are listening into the audience right now, we're sitting around a table in her office in a really cool startup environment. The culture here is very lively. Everybody was really friendly, came up and said hello and came around. It was really, really exciting. So in this conversation, we're going to start off to hear the story of this. So why don't we get started with that? You know, how did you come up with this idea and get started? And then David and I will kind of go back and forth to just have a great conversation with you.
Absolutely, Josh. So the way that Fat Merchant actually got started, so my background, I went to University of Florida. I actually initially wanted to be a dentist. I don't know how or where that idea came about, but that was my major freshman year of college. And as you know, as most young people, we have no clue what the hell we want to do. And ended up hopping around, bouncing majors, and decided that I wanted to pursue a career in business and finance. So naturally, I was just always great at math and loved the business side of it. My passion was actually marketing. However, I'm a super overachiever. And at UF, the harder degree in business school at Warrington to get was the finance degree. And so I opted in for the harder one, ended up doing a double major in finance and marketing, but they only gave you one certificate. So my degree is actually in finance, but I ended up doing both majors in finance and marketing. With a minor in actually in leadership. So they actually offered this minor to us. I kind of had no idea where that meant, but kind of always knew I wanted to get into business in some capacity. But that capacity was not a business of my own. So that was never kind of the passion that I had. I actually come from a family of entrepreneurs. So my parents actually migrated to the U.S. at a young age. And, you know, my dad always has the came to America with $100 in my pocket story. And they've worked their entire life in small businesses that have always failed. And so always figuring out how to make ends meet. Some successes as well, so it wasn't like always failures. I had a great, great, great childhood growing up, but I always saw the burden of finances and businesses and kind of what kind of toll that plays onto a family. And I went to actually 10 different schools in 12 years growing up. And so we always moved around, and one of the things that, you know, I learned a lot about business, but one of the things that my dad was kind of one of those entrepreneurs that got bored really easy. And so it was like on to the next thing and on to the next thing. And I got to actually participate and learn so much growing up. And now that I look back and I'm like, holy shit, I've been trained for this my whole life. But hindsight's always 20/20. But growing up, I hated it. And so I actually never wanted to have my own business. I wanted to work in large corporate America. And I thought that was the dream, to have a stable job, have a family that settles in one place. And we actually ended up moving to Orlando. I was 15 years old, so I hopped around all over Dallas. I grew up in Dallas. I lived in Karachi, Pakistan for a couple years as well, so that's actually where my family's from, and moved to Florida. And so when we moved to Orlando, I was like, I'm never leaving this place. So I don't care what kind of how amazing Orlando is or if it's a shithole. Like, this is the last place that I'm moving.
This is where I'm going to put home.
So a lot of people always ask, like, why Orlando? And it just kind of was by default because I was like, I didn't want to move. I didn't want to move again. And so that's how I ended up actually at UF. So got my degree in finance. I graduated in 2009. And that was when, obviously, the market had crashed. So I was definitely an overachiever in college. I had, like, every internship, every semester lined up. And a lot of my offers got revoked because they were laying off. All the big finance companies were laying off employees. And I ended up taking all the positions that were available were primarily in sales and marketing. And so I took a position with Philip Morris, which is big tobacco. And I sold my soul to the devil. And it was a great learning experience for me. I definitely believe that every college student graduating should have some sort of corporate life experience, because I think it makes you appreciate kind of understanding which side of the world you really do belong in. And I think a lot of people may think they belong in the startup world, but you can't really belong there unless you really know what the other side is like. And so working for a big corporate, it wasn't for me. I was a serial number on a laptop, and that was my ID with thousands and thousands of employees. However, it was definitely, I got to learn a lot of things about process in management, in corporate bureaucracy, and kind of just the way traditionally things are done in systems, business management processes. But at the end of the day, the product that I was selling or I was behind wasn't a product that I was passionate about. And when that doesn't align with your day-to-day, you're not happy in life. Like, you can't be, if you're not happy at work, you're not happy at home. And you're just always, there's this level of unfulfilled piece that always lingers on. You know, you go to work, you spend half your life at work. And if you're not happy in the company that you're passionate about, you kind of see that trickle into your whole world.
How was that trickling into your world? Like, in terms of, like, how was it manifesting itself? Because you were in the corporate world. You studied finance and marketing, which are two different sides of the brain, yep, which I'm fascinated in. But then you were doing something that skillfully, but you weren't passionate about and there was a misalignment. How was that impacting your world and also being in the corporate world?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, I wasn't happy, right? So, like, I wasn't waking up and giving my 110%, although I'm still, you know, I was a great employee, and if I'm going to put my name on something, then I'm going to do it right. And so, but I do think that I left a lot on the table, and I could have grown a lot with the company if I had wanted to, but just the passion to grow there, like, wasn't there. And I wouldn't even call myself a great employee. I was probably a horrible employee, because I challenged everything, and that was something that was innately in me, and I didn't understand why something had to be the way that it was. And so I spent about 3 years with a company, and kind of when the market started to, I'm pretty risk averse. So something that people automatically assume with entrepreneurs is like, oh, you're like definitely risk takers. And I've like grown to accept like the risk. But by nature, that's not who I am. Like, I'm not, you know, it's not who I think I am, actually. But so even leaving a position that was such like a steady position, even though I knew it wasn't right for me, took me some time to kind of like take the leap into something else. So that something else ended up being a position in payments. So I got recruited by a company, and they were like, hey, you're gonna, you know, there's this huge industry and so much opportunity in the payment space. We're becoming more and more cashless as a society. This is back in 2012 now, 2011. And this is like just the early days of like, there really wasn't any sort of payment technology at all. You had PayPal was like the first ever like real payment technology company that was out there. You had Square that was just barely emerging. We hadn't heard about it yet. But traditionally, so the way that payments was done, it's being controlled by all these large banks. So the banks and large legacy players control, you know, 98% of the payments market, and business owners have to go to these, you know, whether it's the bank or a third party to go be able to accept credit card transactions. And there was tons of opportunity because there's a lot of money on the table. So I got enticed with, hey, I can use my background in sales and marketing, but at the end of the day, it's somehow kind of related to finance, and it sounds like it's an interesting opportunity, and so I went with it, and I took it. 6 months into the job, I learned that I hated selling payments more than I hated selling tobacco. And so that was another, like, holy shit moment, what's wrong with me? And I'm always, like, looking back, like, whoa, what, like, is it the industry? Is it myself? Am I just not, like, meant to work in any sort of corporate environment? And it was a smaller company, so it wasn't as large as Altria, Philip Morris, but it's definitely still was a larger payments company. And what I really didn't like, or what I hated the most, was the fact that the customer that I was selling to was a small business, and I felt like they were being taken advantage of on every front. So it's just the way that it's been done, where payment companies, merchant services companies, charge their own percentage markups on each and every single transaction. And when I learned that cost is the same for every provider, so it didn't matter if you're a PayPal or Bank of America or Wells Fargo or First Data or Fat Merchant, Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express, they set the rates every year. It's known as interchange. So, you know, we as consumers have all these million different cards that we use. We have debit cards, we have credit cards, we have rewards cards, we have points plus, we have cash back. We have all these systems on credit cards, but at the end of the day, it's actually the small business that pays for our rewards and our points, because that percentage of the fee on the card is passed on to the SMB, to the small business owner. And how payment companies make money is they tackle on just their own set of percentages and fees on top of the cost. And then it's kind of one of those industries, like how the insurance industry just became very commoditized, a lot of hidden charges, you can't understand a statement. There's, like, because it's such a commoditized business, there really wasn't a service component to these customers as well. So you have these crazy 1-800 numbers. So if you're, you know, your payment terminal is down at your store, or you can't accept transactions, or your invoicing system's broken, you can't really call anyone for help without having these, like, 1-800 crazy AT&T style service situations. Then lastly, zero technology. Like, there's no value add for the SMB, and it's like how many hands can get into that pot and juice the same old juice from the same old lemon. Like, it's just undercutting all the payment companies are just undercutting each other to zero. So what I mean by that is the only payment pitch, like, that every payment company had was, let me see your merchant services statement and I could beat your rates. Mm-hmm. And everyone's just beating each other's quote rates because it's whoever can get to direct costs. Like, so it was just a race to the bottom. So after realizing that, I learned the industry a little bit and I went back to my old bosses. And as a millennial, that is subscribing into this new subscription era. And this is now, we have a few subscriptions that are, like, it's now, like, starting to come out. So you had, like, your Wine of the Club, you had Birchbox, you had Dollar Shave Club, and all of these cool things that we're subscribing to. And it wasn't as many subscriptions as, like, I have today. But seeing this movement in transparency, in ease of, like, in user experience, in the customer experience, in the technology experience, and the subscription pricing, like the flat subscription pricing, I went back to my old bosses and I said, hey, I have this crazy idea, but hear me out. Why don't we launch a flat monthly subscription pricing model for all our SMBs? And they can do unlimited credit card processing, but instead of charging any variable profit, we give them the direct cost that Visa, MasterCard charges, so they get direct interchange. And instead of paying percentage markups, they pay us a flat monthly subscription and we'll charge it like a membership. And of course, they thought it was the craziest idea in the world. And I left really disappointed. So I actually...
Wait, you said you left.
Yeah.
Were you fired after you came up with that idea?
No,
they were like, get out of here.
I wasn't fired. Okay. I wish I was fired. It would have made it a lot easier. But I ended up quitting, right? So I ended up leaving. I got back on that plane. Actually, I remember that day very, very clearly, because I put so much time and energy into this business plan that I had created and all I wanted to do. And it was such a simple business proposition. I had clear ROI that I had, you know, was trying to drive from. All I wanted to do was prove out an MVP in my territory, and not even utilizing a ton of the company resources. Like, 90% of all our resources are still going to be exactly what we're going to do. We're still going to hit targets. let me just test this little piece out. And if it has any traction, or if it, you know, if I can prove this to you, then we'll take it to the next level. So I didn't come out and try to propose, like, I'm not one to ever propose just crazy shit without having thought through the right solutions or how this is going to be impactful on, from, I knew exactly what they wanted. They wanted to drive ROI, right? Mm-hmm. So I came with that proposition. So I was really disappointed that I didn't even get an opportunity to even, like, try an experiment. And that's kind of, that's part of how big cultures, big corporate cultures operate. Like, they don't like switching away from things that are working. That's just the way that it's been done. And that was the answer that I was given. And I remember just being on that flight back and just feeling really disappointed in the fact that I know that there are some legs here. Like, I'm not just, like, I felt it in my gut that there was something right with this idea. And I'm like, I can go back and work for a company that doesn't believe in me, right? Like, I'm just a cog in the wheel that is going to produce the results that they want to produce. And this, I'm going to have to bury this and kind of live the same way that I've been living for the last 4 years now and not having that fulfillment inside. Or I can go try to see if there's any legs behind this idea. And so at the age of 26, with $20,000 in my bank account, I decided to quit and to go start this company called Fat Merchant. It stands for Fast Affordable Transaction Technology. And it was meant to be, and when I was coming up with a name for it, it was actually meant to be everything that every payment company wasn't, right? So, it, you know, with the pig as our logo and with the branding, and I think that was like another piece that was missing in the payments, when I was in the payments industry, was there really wasn't anyone. I never met a customer that was like, hey, I love my merchant services provider. Never. Like, yeah. I never met a company that was like, I love my payments company. They're so awesome. You know, I talk to them all the time on social, or they provide so much value to me. I can't live without them. When payments are like the heart of every business, like every small business, the only way they operate is by collecting payments. Like, you're not in business if you're not collecting payments. Yet why is this, you know, this part of your business or this vendor is such a necessary evil, when as everything else is a value add? And so really, you know, that customer experience was something that I really took to heart and was something that we wanted to change. So at first it was really around transparency in the pricing model. And we launched, so that was 2013 where I left, and getting our card brand registry, like, I had a huge feet, like, mountain in front of me to go across, because I had to go get a sponsor bank. And it's like, who's going to sponsor this 26-year-old kid who has, like, really only, like, 2 years of experience in payments? Like, what does she know? And I have to find a company, so find a bank that's going to be able to house our transactions. And I have zero idea on risk and compliance and just kind of how to even get through even getting our registration completed. And I don't have a team yet, right? So, I mean, I don't have a team. I've barely got any dollars. But I ended up knocking on so many doors, like, and I think it was my 12th no that finally turned into a yes. And it was a payment processing company called Vantiv. They're actually, at the time, they were the third or fourth largest processor in the United States, so First Data being the first one. And now, actually, they're the number one processor currently in the States, because they ended up acquiring. They've been growing like crazy, and they're a pretty technology-driven organization. And they decided that somebody there decided to take a risk on, you know, on Sinera and this business idea. And so, and they're still our number one partner today. So it's now WorldPay is their name, but they're, that's who runs our back end for our transactions. So got my registration and everything done. It was March of 2014, and our Visa MasterCard registration was like, it was just like they hold $10,000 in reserve or something. So literally, like, the next morning, it was like, here's $20,000 in the bank, and like $10,000 was taken out. And it's like, how do you start a company? You have no funding. You have to go get customers. And the way that I went about was just talking about my idea to everyone. Mm-hmm. And I used Orlando as a platform. So I came to downtown Orlando, and I got introduced to this little emerging tech scene, which I'm so proud of now today. But I got introduced to Kunal Patel and Shay Glennie, Shay Dania mm-hmm. and, you know, Donna and Starter Studio. And I'm going to leave so many names out, but we did, like, the Ron Benzeev, like, and they invited me out to this launch starter. It was, like, a weekend launch pad thing where you go present your
startup
idea.
Weekend.
Startup weekend. Mm-hmm. So they invited me to Startup Weekend. They're like, come to this thing. We're going to talk about entrepreneurship and cool ideas, and you can bring your idea to the table. And so I actually pitched Fat Merchant at Startup Weekend, and nobody joined my team. So nobody joined my team, and so I felt like I had so many, like, so many times where I could have probably given up and been like, oh, there's really no legs on here, because, like, the amount of no's that I heard, I can't even count anymore.
Can I ask you a question on that?
Yeah, please.
So you got a job in corporate, started doing well, and then found out this isn't for me. You know, felt really discouraged, kind of had some, like, identity struggles, got, you know, went to another business, kind of started feeling that in 6 months. Then you went out on your own, it cost half of your savings, you know, you're getting no's all day long. And then you go to a startup place where there's supposed to be a ton of excitement, and then you get a bunch of no's there, and then you're by yourself.
Yeah.
How in the world, what did that do to your mindset, your, like, what you felt about your identity? Like,
yeah. No,
walk us through that.
I joined another team. So I ended up just joining another team, and it really wasn't the no's from, like, it was still a great experience. Like, my idea didn't get picked, but yeah, on the idea end, I was like, okay, I really have a lot to really think through. And part of the startup weekend was, like, kind of getting customer validation and learning through the process. And so it was still, I still went through and obviously joined another team. We actually did, like, a Fitbit for dog team. For dogs, it was like a collar that's like a Fitbit for pets, and I think it exists now, but still a fun opportunity. But that's where I got to meet most of, like, these people that really became friends, mentors, colleagues, and really were on a mission to bring the, you know, the Orlando technology, like, bring a community, like, it didn't exist, and to really, like, you know, kind of, I found a little home. And it was, although on the idea, and I didn't give up. I don't know. I still felt. It was like, it's still in my gut that this is gonna be good. And I sold. So the one thing that I had to do was, it wasn't just about building. I had to build, but I had to survive. And so I had to get customers. And that was probably getting to, like, I got literally to the first 100 customers we did in the early days by ourselves, door to door, right? Not scalably. It was all the low-hanging fruit. It was, who do we know? Who do we know? I had my first hire in August of 2014, and that was like another big step, was to commit to a little office. We were in the Angie Belt, get our first employee, and she's now, like, vice president of business development at Fat Merchant, and just seen her, Lindsay, grow just leaps and bounds. And it was, I think it's like the early team days were, like, just so much fun, and all the sacrifice and all the hard work. And now we look back and we're like, wow, like, we've built something so incredible, and we did it ourselves. And we did it. And the hardest part was really getting through that journey of getting through the first 100 customers. And there was a lot of learnings and a lot of pivots in between that process. But at the end of the day, we knew we had to get revenue on the board. And so we were all around town. We were pitching Fat Merchant. And we took home almost $200,000 in prize money and competition wins from competitions. So we won the NABO business plan competition.
Yeah.
We won the Rollins venture plan competition. We won the Bright House competition. I think we got third place, but at the YPO competition. And it was just like taking home check after check after check. So every time we take home a check, we put it in the bank account, and then we go try a different way to go acquire customers. And traditionally in payments, the way that you sell merchant services, it's very feet on the street heavy. So it's heavy on people, but we didn't have the budget for that. And so of course we went online and we started experimenting with Google Ads and building our SEO and building a great website. And that's where we focused our energy on, was how do we get customers for the lowest customer acquisition cost. And literally, I was Sanera, I was Sunny, I was Sadie, I was Sally, I was a customer support girl. Literally, Lindsay and I would sit across from each other and we would pick up the phone as like different people and be like, oh, hold please. And then I would like transfer it back to Lindsay.
Did you change your accent or something?
No, we didn't. We would try to like pawn it off to each other and just make, we literally faked it till we made it.
Yeah.
And even like we had, just online, and we started getting traction online where a lot of the review sites started catching on to this model, and they're like, holy shit, this is so different, and we were so unique, right? So we're the first subscription-based payment processor. So when the word started spreading, it started spreading really fast, especially digitally, right?
Yeah.
And we got a lot of great local press. Shout out to Uproar PR, by the way.
Yeah.
And from there, a writer from Fast Company reached out. And I would say that was one of those, like, holy pivotal moments for Fat Merchant. I'm trying not to swear. I swear a lot, so I'm working on it. It was our holy moment.
Yeah.
Beep. Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
And that article went viral. And our little tiny office in Angieville with two phones in it and 2.5 bodies. We also had one intern. That article, we had to get phones installed. We had to get people, all the startups on the floor were helping us pick up our phones. We had no CRM system. We were using Trello as our CRM system. We had a GoDaddy website. Our website crashed. Like, everything was, like, the greatest and the worst thing that ever happened to us. And it was really so much lost opportunity. Like, we lost so much opportunity by being on, like, front cover, front page that day of Fast Company. The article was Meet the Woman Trying to Change the Credit Card Industry. And it was really exciting, and it talked about the transparent model, and we just had customers just ringing us, sending us emails, how do I sign up? Mm-hmm. And from there, we're like, this has legs, and we're thinking way too small, and we need to scale. But how do we scale? We need technology. We need internal technology, and we need to like build out our payment platform. Because at that time, we were white labeling WorldPay solutions. And so where do you go for technology? I'm in this community, and they're like, hey, go check out, there's this new accelerator that has just started. It's called Starter Studio. It hadn't even been, it was like 1 year in the making, so they had two classes that had gone through Starter Studio. So I applied for class 3, and we actually didn't initially get in. And I remember talking to Greg and Kirsty on our application, and they're like, well, you're not a tech company. And I'm like, yes, I'm not a tech company, but that's exactly why we need you guys. Like, I need to build the tech, and I don't know where else to go. And I'm like, you guys can help me build the tech. So all these companies that are in there, they can help me build the tech, and I can help them on how to sell. Mm. So
that's a great exchange, right?
That was a great exchange. And so I ended up joining class 3 of Starter Studio. And in that short 12-week program, also met some amazing mentors along the way. And ended up pitching at Demo Day and asked for $500,000 from the Orlando community. And we were oversubscribed to 1.4 million in a matter of days. I actually had put my cell phone on the Demo Day. Like, at the end, the last slide was like, text me if you want to invest. And so we had some great traction there. We ended up taking $850,000 for our seed round. There shortly after, we did about a 1.4 million Series A. So we did like the full Series A for around $2.5 million for our Series A. And that first year that I was talking about, 2014, we did $5 million in payments. And then the next year we did $110 million. Then the next year we did $750 million. Last year we did $1 billion. And we've already crossed $2 billion this year.
Huge growth. That's absolutely wonderful.
Yes. And our little tiny office that was just the two of us is now 75 team members. We have like 3 floors of this TD Bank building now. And it's just, we have offices in 4 different cities, and it's unbelievable. And I'm like, literally every day I walk in, it's still holy shit every day.
So Nero, this is David Brim. Question about the industry that you've basically disrupted is a commodity business. And you admitted that, but when you came up with this innovative model to do subscription-based, how did you protect yourself from other people when you had so much PR? How did you have the barriers to entry? So, okay, if you're differentiating, as you said, race to the bottom, okay, I'm flipping the model, now it's a subscription, there's no variable cost, I'd imagine you had a lot of people that wanted to copycat you before you had the technology to really lean in and differentiate further. Can you talk a little bit about that and then how you even today are striving to continue to innovate with your technology to continue differentiating?
Such a great question. This is so important. You can't build a business on price itself. You can't do that. So if you want to be the cheaper search solution with just has like good service, there's 99 million businesses in line there after you. So we knew that. So we knew that even though the model was different and transparent, it's still a savings model. And what really needed to differentiate was what I call like was the value add for the customer, which is stickiness of the payment platform. And so how we went about that, and everything was iterative. So we learned all of these things through our customer, like as customers were on our platform, every feature, every single piece of technology that we've built, and I go into what is our technology, right? So we provide payment processing solutions for the small business. So small businesses now today aren't just taking payments in one way. So let's think about Sally's Cupcakes, right? So she has a store. She needs to take payment at the point of sale. So when you like go to the store to go check out, she's going to have either a terminal or a point of sale system that you're going to check out in. That is one way to take payments. Then she probably has an online store and you can go online and she ships cakes across the nation. Then she has brides that may have large catering orders, or she does parties and things like that, and she needs to send, or she does corporate events, she needs to send the company an invoice. So now she's got the point of sale, she's got an online shopping cart, she's got an invoicing system, and she sets up shop at the Sunday at the Winter Garden of, you know, farmer's market, and she needs a mobile device. So small businesses are accepting payments in more than one way, and what we found is that there's awesome payment technology for a single point solution. So you've got Square that does great for mobile, and you've got Shopify that does great for online, and you've got QuickBooks that does great for invoicing, and she can go to the bank, you know, Bank of America for her terminal. But she's got four different processors, four different rates, four different fees, and not one person to call. And nothing talks to each other, right? So she can't log on to a single place to see how her business is doing. She has to pull reporting and reconciliation from all these different places. It's not in real time, and everything is then dumped into in accounting software like QuickBooks Online, and then she can see the health of her business. But she has to actually operate like four different mechanisms to conduct business. And we're like, that's not how any other part of the business is run. And especially where technology is going, you know, data should be, especially for the health of your business, should be in the palm of your hands. So what we built is we offer the same Sally. We're like, okay, great. We can offer you a mobile device to replace that. We can offer you our terminal to replace your terminal, our virtual terminal to replace your invoicing solution, and our shopping cart. Well, if you want to take two of those solutions and you want us to integrate with your invoicing system and you want us to integrate with your point of sale, we can do that too. So we customize for however the business takes payments. They can use one of our solutions, or we can integrate with 98% of devices that are out there. Then we aggregate all of the payment data in real time back into a single unified platform that's called Omni. So that's our Fat Merchant payment platform. And so now when you open up your app, you can see everything in real time in one place and understand, here's how my e-commerce is doing, here's how my retail store is doing. I can see reporting that will automatically be synced, you know, to my QuickBooks. So now we've even gotten our integrations so great that as soon as you're running transactions on anything Fat Merchant related, it is automatically sent to your QuickBooks reporting. So the QuickBooks is actually the number one accounting platform used by SMBs. And we have one of the most robust QuickBooks integration in the payments marketplace today that's bi-directional. So what I mean is usually the integrations that people have created for QuickBooks, it only goes one way. So if some small businesses, what I'm talking about, are like super familiar with this, you still have to extract reporting and then put it into your QuickBooks, but it doesn't talk to each other. Our Fat Merchant Sync, it's literally like log. If you've ever used like Mint or any sort of financial product, you literally just add in all your accounts. It's simple as that.
So this sounds really great, and the technology that you have and what you've described is definitely a really clear differentiator. But at that point when you raised your first 850, I believe, seed round, that didn't quite exist yet.
No.
So to me, this seems like the kind of business that needs to grow extremely quickly.
Yes.
and really get big fast. And so can you talk about, you raised 850 in Orlando, was that right?
Yes, I raised the Series A round, seed in Series A in Orlando. So I raised about $2.5 million in Orlando. Excuse me. Then I did our Series B, which came from Fulcrum Equity out of Atlanta. So then we did a $5.5 million Series B literally about a year ago. Sorry, that's
they're clapping for you right now.
That's our sales team. I know it's always so fun in the office. And then we just did a Series C, a secondary round with Fulcrum Equity. Sorry, that's our team.
More sales. Less sales happening.
Guys, ladies and gentlemen listening into this show right now, in the background we hear people clapping. They just successfully, they call them success.
We met somebody in the elevator. Oh, client success.
Oh, and I was like, customer success is upstairs. That's for our customer, like that's for customer service.
Yeah.
Payment consultants is who you're seeing out here, and they're just being obnoxious and fun. And every time they close a deal, they ring the bell and we all celebrate together. And we hear about which small business that they helped and a little bit about that business's story, and we all get to hear it. So it's a really fun way for us to kind of connect with the businesses that
are
our customers.
Culture.
So they're cheering on the success of their client right now.
Yes.
Them clapping right now. Well, what you guys heard is...
Well, they're also cheering for their success because they closed the deal, but they're sharing the story of that business.
Oh my gosh, awesome. Well, that was fun. Okay, yeah. So
going back, you were talking about the fundraising. And then we did a 10 million from... 10.5 from Fulcrum Equity again. Partially, some of that was still Orlando. So our initial funds have always continued to support us at every round. But we did 15 million out of Atlanta. So the majority of our funding did come from outside of Florida, which is something that I hope to change. I don't know how I can change it, or at least, you know, be a voice to it. You know, one of the biggest gaps that we have here in Orlando, and I talk about this always, is funding from early stage. And I meet so many great founders who do have fantastic ideas and have the ability to execute. So I always say there's no such thing as a $1 billion idea. It's only a $1 billion execution, right? Like anyone can have an idea, but it's really about what's your team, how can you execute, and how are you continuing to iterate? And you're right. When we first launched, it was just the subscription pricing. But the first thing we identified was one of the biggest products that we were selling was a virtual terminal. So people needed recurring billing and an invoicing solution to take online transactions, not like a shopping cart, but primarily for service-based companies like marketing companies, law firms, etc. And the systems that they were using are super, super clunky. They were like, just looked like they were created from an MS-DOS. Like nothing had changed in like the 20 years of whoever built this, you know, virtual terminal is what they called it. And so that's when I went to Starter Studio, when we did the first initial round, we did have version one of our virtual terminal. That was like our first actual proprietary product. And about 40% of our customers were purchasing our solution, and about 60% of our customers were purchasing still the white label solutions. And so the goal was to still build out the other solutions that would come to our suite. But as we continued to grow, the technology evolved into becoming the platform, and not just, we do have the standalone solutions, but focus now is, it doesn't matter even if you're using, you know, we call it the dumb terminal. So no offense to anybody that has dumb terminals on their countertops, but just a dumb terminal that's just taking the payment transaction. It's not giving you anything. It's just one way to, it's just collecting payments, and it's awesome. It's going in your bank account, and we can do just that. But even the dumb terminal, doesn't matter what terminal is connected to, you can open your Fat Merchant app and then have all your data analytics. Understand who your customers are, which ones are returning, which ones are loyal, what's your lifetime value of your customer, what time of day are you busiest? Do you need to staff up Thursdays at 4 p.m. because your heat map shows that this is when you do most of the transactions? And that's all for free.
How amazing is that data from a marketing standpoint? Because if you wanted to ramp up your AdWords campaign for the, you know, high profile times, and then have the capacity operationally to handle it and double your staff, I mean, what amazing data and demographics you guys collect.
And that's next level, right? So that's been like the evolution. So you can't start, and we didn't just get there. It wasn't just overnight. So it started with the VT, our virtual terminal. Then we went, okay, if you're taking payments online, then it needs to, like, our healthcare. So everything was created by customers. So the virtual terminal, we had a bunch of healthcare people using the doctor's office, and he sent the invoices. But then they're like, oh, we need to connect it to, we have the terminals at the, you know, to take copays, but that doesn't talk to the system. We're having to use two different, so we're like, well, we can make it talk to each other. And then we add the mobile component and the card present like feature to it. Then that got evolved and that got evolved. And so it's just kind of, it's grown over time. And now we're on some next level shit. Like with QuickBooks, like this was like, and we're going to market this year at Money 2020. It's like the biggest payment conference to really talk and really talk about our QuickBooks integration. I think it's going to be probably, the next big scale for us, because it's such a widely used tool and there really isn't anybody doing the bi-directional sync the way that we are. And so we're really excited about that and excited about showcasing Omni this year, but it's been a journey.
Yeah.
So you talked about raising money here and then the largest portion of your funding has came out of Atlanta, and I'd imagine, and I read some of the articles too about them wanting you ideally to relocate there. I know it's a sensitive topic, but and you've chosen to stay here, and maybe this goes back to the initial story of I'm not moving anywhere.
I'm not moving. Everybody knows I'm not moving.
Thank you for that, by the way. Orlando loves you for that.
No, and it's not easy. I think that there's definitely business value cases to leave Orlando, but there are plenty to stay as well. And I think that it's, we have to, we're not, sorry, that's like our team outside again. I lost my train of thought, but there's the value cases to say, absolutely. And I think that we need more companies to have good successes and exits here so that we can, you know, we can pave the way. And I feel like I'm so ever grateful for the Orlando community to have always given me a voice, to have gotten, without Orlando, Fat Merchant would not be in existence. I mean, Mayor Buddy Dyer literally talks about Fat Merchant in every single one of his speeches, and he's come to do our ribbon cutting, and we've had support from, you know, every piece of the community, from all the universities to all the tech accelerators in the program, from UCF Incubator to Starter Studio, even from the local publications. And so you don't get opportunities like that. And we're so fortunate to be in a community that is really a community. Like, we are all one degree of separation away from Donna McKenzie, right? Like, everyone is one degree of separation away from anybody that you want to know. And you can climb up so fast and get your ideas heard and be invited into something really special. And I'm just really proud of that. And I hope to continue to give back just the ways that whatever I can, and hopefully inspire more entrepreneurs to build great companies and stay and scale in Orlando.
Yeah. Fantastic. So this is a great conversation, because one of the things that you mentioned was talk about your ideas to everyone. Now, I just had a conversation with an entrepreneur today, and they said, well, I don't want to talk about my idea because what if someone steals it, right? So as we kind of... Yeah, why don't you give, maybe help us wrap our minds and kind of peg your thoughts into that.
I don't know. I think that's like the dumbest shit ever when people are like,
that's a great way.
Oh, I can't share my idea because someone's going to steal it. No one's going to steal your idea. Like, no one cares enough about your idea as like to think that if someone's going to steal it. If you're not going to talk about your idea, you're never going to network. You're not going to meet the right connections. You're not going to be able to get people on your team. You're not going to be able to get investors. You're not going to be able to do shit if you don't talk about your idea. So those ideas live and die in your head. Mm-hmm. So that is the hard truth. There are some companies that they build in private, and then they build and they build and they build and they build, and then I've literally only ever heard of just a few that have like ever succeeded from that strategy. I personally have never met a founder that has actually had success that was shy about talking, or not shy, that was introverted about talking about their idea.
And I think a big part of that too is that if you talk about your idea, people will actually give you feedback, and the community can essentially build it and steer in the direction that it should go.
Yes.
As compared to somebody sitting in a room with nobody and coming up with what they think the community
will want. Yes, because that's it. They're their biggest fan, their biggest critic, their biggest customer. It doesn't make any sense. It's the dumbest shit I've ever heard, and I hear it all the time. Like, it is a thing. Like, entrepreneurs really do think that they can't share their ideas, and no one's gonna steal your shit.
Sign this NDA.
Yeah. No one's going to steal it. No one cares. No one gives a shit.
I do want to comment, too, before we turn the recording on, we were talking about the fact that Josh and me and you are all parents, and it can be challenging at times to balance business with parenthood, so I did want to ask you about that, and also your passion for female business owners and what you're doing there.
Yes, this is a perfect place to end the conversation, for sure, because it's probably one of the most things I am most passionate about. You guys can all follow me on my Instagram at mombossblog. To get a glimpse of my personal life, because it is so hard to be a mom and a boss and be a career-driven woman, and still manage a family. So it's definitely not easy. And it's not just about, you know, I actually appreciate all the dads too. So it's not just about moms. It's hard. You're sacrificing so much to build your business, and you always, obviously your family comes first, but you're having to, they have to sacrifice with you. You have to sacrifice time, money, you know, resources. They have to go through all the emotional struggle, like your family and your spouses and your children have to go through all the emotions that you're going through. I mean, every single day you see all the little funny memes about like life of an entrepreneur. It's always like a roller coaster. And that is true. Like even like one single day, your emotions go from high to low all day long, and it's not easy for yourself. You know, you gotta have, like, there's a different type of personality that it takes, and it also takes a different type of family to be able to support that as well. And so I really do appreciate you know, the parenthood journey and having to be able to sacrifice a lot. You know, I don't get to spend as much time. I literally my daughter's 2 years old. So she was born in the midst of Fat Merchant.
She was born actually here in this office?
She took her first steps here in this office. I was working up until the day that I gave birth. So literally like went to the hospital from the office. And Milo was born. And I was back at work in less than 3 weeks. And although, you know, I mean, we have a great, you know, maternity and paternity policy here for our employees, for our team members. It's tough as a business owner. Like she had to just come with me to work, and we had to make it work. And she literally has her pack and play like in the room, and people, you know, I'd literally just have to take meetings from in here and like literally have like a newborn in our office, and I wouldn't change it for the world. But there's a lot of things that I've sacrificed as being her mom, on things that I haven't been able to do, on milestones that I've missed. And it's definitely hard on me, but and in our family. But at the end of the day, you know, it's hopefully going to be worth it, because I want to be an example for her and lead the way in where I never believed in myself the way that I've ever believed in myself that I do today. And I want to be able to have a great ending to this story and be like, hey, we sacrificed all of this and it was worth it. And like, look what I've been able to do, and tell her that, you know, her mom got most influential woman in payments this year. I got most influential woman in payments. And that's crazy. Like, it's so crazy. Like, the other people that were recognized in this category were like Visa and TSYS and MasterCard and like these huge, huge, huge names. And here I am, Sanara Madani, this girl from Orlando, this average girl from Orlando that was just crowned, like literally I call it crowned. It's like, that's how I felt. Like, it's just the most influential woman. And that's an example that I want my daughter to look up to, and hopefully other women. And I want to inspire other women, because I have so many friends that have always, as soon as they get into the mom life, it's like, I have to choose between being a mom, and I have to choose between like my career. And that's not fair, and I don't think it has to be one or the other. And so you're never going to have everything. Like, you're going to have to sacrifice on both ends. Like, your plate can only hold so much. But I try to do my best every day to balance this life. And I was just telling you guys, I have a 2-night rule. So I have to travel a lot for work, obviously. I'm in meetings all over the country. But I have a 2-night rule where I won't stay away from home for my family for more than 2 nights. And I'm always on, like, every first flight in, last flight out, all the red eyes that I can take from West Coast to ensure that I still, like, make it home for dinner, for breakfast the next morning. So it's not easy, but I share a little bit of that journey on my little Instagram feed, so you can follow my journey. And we have number 2 on the way, so we're, like, crazy enough already juggling everything with one. My husband's actually an entrepreneur as well, so it is, everything is on schedule, but we can make it happen, right, guys? Like, yeah. I mean, you guys all have businesses and you have kids, and I think what's great about it is I feel fulfilled at work, so now I'm like happy at home too. And that was something that I didn't have, you know, 6 years ago. And so I'm just really appreciative of that and trying to live my best life every day.
Well, you are absolutely an inspiration, Sonira.
Yeah. So it's... And she has, ladies and gentlemen, she has the biggest smile on her face when she's talking about her family and her business and her team. And so why don't we do this? If people want to know more about you, learn more about your business, where could people go to find you?
Yes. So first, you can go to fatmerchant.com. That's F-A-T-T merchant.com to learn more about the business and get signed up. So definitely, if you guys are small businesses out there that are looking to switch to Fat Merchant, please do. I'm happy to give you guys a free month to try us out as well, so you can use promo code MOMBOSS like on checkout or when you talk to one of our payment consultants. So give us a try us out, and then you can also reach me just at my Twitter handle is Sonira Madani, so it's my first and last name. You can reach me at Twitter. You can reach me on my Instagram, which is MomBossBlog, and I'm pretty easy to find over email as well. I won't share it now, but it's not that hard to find me. So you could find me anywhere. I'm always socialing and online.
Excellent. Fantastic. Well, thank you for sharing your journey, for talking about why Orlando, for sticking here and saying, I'm not freaking moving. we love you, and we love what you guys are doing here. And thank you for just being a part of this mission.
No, thanks for having me. You guys are, I love your mission and what you guys are trying to promote. And let's, you know, hopefully carry this message forward that Orlando is really cool. And we all should grow a great community here.
Excellent. Well, thank you all for listening into this this show today and being a part of this community. If you want to know more about her and her business and the things that they're doing, you could go into the show notes below to find that information. Just click on it there and get direct access to her Instagram and her Twitter and to connect with her team. And she's given away a very generous offer to people who are looking to make that switch or to learn more about the business. So, guys, thank you for being a part of this Orlando community and building incredible stuff here and staying here. So I hope you guys have a wonderful day. And we'll talk to you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.